podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap, Neil Atkinson with John Gibbons, Mike Kearney and Rob Gutman to talk about Liverpool against Manchester City to start with. We'll work through that game. Then we'll sort of have a brief chat about the little run we've had. And we will also have a conversation about the run of games, the intensity of the fixtures, what the managers are talking about ultimately. But we'll start with Liverpool versus Manchester City. And Rob, it's everyone walks away, everyone shakes hands on a point. Everyone, broadly speaking, feels good about that point, I think, and takes it. It could have been a bit more from a Liverpool point of view, but it could also have been zero. It was an intense game for an hour, and then it was like a summer tournament, extra time for half an hour.
Yeah, I can't work out whether I feel it's an opportunity missed or not. It obviously isn't in a point. It's a good point. I think we all felt beforehand that a point would be a good point. Although it was, you could see how Liverpool win that game. I think with a modicum more luck in that you know, barnstorming opening half hour, we're 2-0 up. And they're suddenly thinking, oh, here we go again. We're much more relaxed and we probably get to score another one. But it was a very, very high-risk strategy Jurgen Klopp went with. And I sort of annoyed and admiring in equal measure with him. And, you know, what the fuck do I know relative to Jurgen? But I was living on my wits' ends in that first half hour until we scored. Oh, no, what's going on? Oh, they're going to break. It was just seemed crazy. It just seemed batshit crazy. Especially as it's almost like you'd seen that game where we lost 4-0 and think then way to remedy that would be to do exactly the same thing again. It felt like that anyway. I mean, maybe, you know, you can't be objective in the heat of battle, can you?
You can't be objective in the heat of battle, Mike. And we sort of remain even now this far away from the game a little bit in the heat of battle. It was because it was so involving in those opening exchanges. And it did seem as though Liverpool had decided they were just going to throw all the chips down and see where they were by half time.
Yeah, it's. I think they've obviously seen something with to be confident to be able to do the basically 4-2-4. I know it could have been a 4-2-3-1 out of possession, this, that, and the other, but you know, when we were attacking, it was basically our four attackers against their four defenders a lot of the time. So we obviously seen something. And you know, City aren't the best defensively. You know, we've seen teams starting to get at them a bit more after they'd sort of backed off and marvelled at them when they got the 100-point season. You know, people woke up to the fact that, hang on a minute, like, we actually can get at these. So I think Klopp's obviously thought, maybe the hat stick on Wednesday, Tuesday for Jota's, just thought, you know, well, actually, I was half thinking about doing this. I'm absolutely doing this now. And we'll go for it. We'll go for it big time, see what it comes of. I mean, we're sitting there 2 or 3 nil up after 30 minutes. Everyone's going, tell you what, Jürgen's absolutely had Guardiola's kicks off here. It took them that while to figure out what was going on. And then there was Wijnaldum. There was a point in the first half where Wijnaldum goes off his header at Robertson because he'd made a run, and Robertson sort of played it back along the back line, and Wijnaldum saying to him, "I'm in, put me in." And it's like, "Hang on, Junior, we've got four up there. Why are you breaking your neck to make it like empty in midfield?" But I was sort of like, "Well, you know what? They're not going to absolutely run away with us because." I felt, you know, Matip came in and did what Matip always does. Good performance. First time Gomez and Matip have played together, isn't it? And they were, you know, Gomez has really, really picked his levels up since Van Dijk's injury. So, like, I felt, you know what, we'd be all right. And, if, you know, worst case scenario, we go one down and look like we're getting overrun. Then you take one of the four off and drop a midfielder in if you need be. It wasn't like, well, What are we doing? Sort of thing. For me, I was more relaxed and just you know, unfortunately finishing and balls bouncing the way they didn't go our way. And, you know, as I'm saying, you go 3-0 up, everyone's going, tell you what, we get one of these off now and manage this through 45.
Yeah.
But we didn't, and, you know, we'll absolutely take a point from when De Bruyne is putting the ball on the spot.
We would at that point, John. I all took a point, I think it's fair to say, when De Bruyne is putting the ball on the spot. One of the things to sort of take away from it is the first 30 minutes is crazy. It feels like the whole game is just completely up in the air. It feels like it's unbelievably end-to-end. And yet Liverpool, in the first 30 minutes, only have three shots and one of them's the penalty. And I think that, you know, when Klopp's looking back at this one, and it's not dissimilar to the 4-0, in that in the 4-0 Liverpool have lots of really good chances and chances to create chances in the early part of that game. That maybe that's where Liverpool actually missed the opportunity, as Rob said before. If it had been 2-0 Liverpool by half an hour, you wouldn't have gone, that's crazy. But it's strange to say that when you can't actually identify a specific shot that Liverpool miss in that period.
Yeah, I think that's fair, mate. And I think, you know, there was a few times where you just felt we sort of picked the wrong option or the wrong option, but the slightly wrong time, maybe sort of delayed the pass a little bit too much a couple of times. You know, others, you know, we hesitated or just sort of overrun it. And you just felt like we were almost kind of there a couple of times. A couple of times it didn't sort of bounce for us as well, I think it is fair to say. And also I think, like, you know, both City and Liverpool to extent, I think I've underrated defenders in that, you know, people have just decided, oh, they're much better and they can't defend. I think that a lot of the defensive issues for City are around, you know, how they set up and what they do, and it's been similar for kind of Liverpool over the years as well. And I think when they're tasked with defending, they actually do it pretty well because these lads cost 50 million quid. Do you know what I mean? And when they're obviously set up in other ways and set up to kind of, you know, to play basically two defenders and 17 midfielders, you know, obviously, oh, sometimes there's gaps at the back, you know, who can believe it? And so I think, you know, it wasn't much of a surprise to me to see their defenders sort of defend well individually, because I think when they sort of are a bit more focused on it, which they obviously have to be against Liverpool, that will happen. So you got to see that was the case as well. And I thought their goalie did okay in a couple of moments as well where he needed to, you know, that early one, you know, that's very early with Firmino. I think he does well. And so I think you've got to sort of respect who you're coming up against and that it's not going to be easy despite what people say about, you know, the this, the that and things like that. They're still one of the best teams in the world, you know, by considerable distance. And I thought, you know, the fact that Liverpool, you know, were able to dominate periods of the game and were able to sort of come away thinking, yeah, that's a good point, you know, is credit to them, although there's still little bits of, well, if we'd have only done this as well.
Just to sort of come back on the quality of the sort of the defending, John, I think one of the things that both sets of defenders do on both sides is just put a little bit of doubt into the minds of the attacker. And in a couple of quite key moments, I think it isn't just one or the other. I think one of the things that's actually marked from both the penalties, I would argue, sorry, the Liverpool penalty and the Manchester City goal, I would argue, is when that doubt isn't there, when there isn't just one sort of leg hanging around. I think Jesus gets a little bit of luck, but for instance, Mane just decides he's just going to burst through and he's going to remove all of that. There's always someone who's on the half cover or just almost blocking a lane off, but not quite blocking it off, maybe blocking it off and then it bounces. But this is quite sophisticated defending, I think, and you see it from both sides.
Yeah, you saw a lot of intelligent position, I thought, from City. There was a couple of times where you're like, oh, it looks like a bad ball, but then you see it and he's just sort of anticipating it, or he's alive to it, or they know, you know, they've studied each other a lot, these teams have indeed, you know, and Klopp's
played each other a lot now, yeah, these footballers.
Klopp's beaten Pep Guardiola more than any other manager, and you know, so, but you know, that's a good thing, but it also means that, you know, Pep's well aware of what Klopp's going to sort of throw at them, and I thought, and they're going to be on it as well, and I think as I say, I think City got caught on the hop a little bit by Liverpool's formation and approach, but you know, they obviously sort of, you know, got back into the game through their own sort of, you know, good play and doggedness really. And then it was Liverpool sort of a little bit looking around, going, oh, what are they sort of doing here? It's a tough game. We've had a couple of hammerings there. We've got to be, you know, sort of. Yeah. You know, Rob mentioned the 4-0, you know, a few years before that with the man he sent off and we end up getting hit for 5, do you know? I mean, we've had some fun there, but, you know, we've also been battered a couple of times. So that is sort of, you know, you need to sort of remember that really, the level of what we're up against.
We come away from it, Rob, just sort of the last bit on the feelings and then beginning to look at a couple of the specific performances. We come away from it feeling a little like, had there been one more push from Liverpool? And for me, one of the things I wonder is if the manager in hindsight wishes that when he turned and looked at his bench on 56, 60, he was looking at Diego Jota on the bench rather than looking at Diego Jota on the pitch. It can feel like a bit of an easy thing to say. The other thing I also take from it is, you know, we act as though the 4-2-4, it might well have been, you know, managers make percentage-based decisions. It may well have been he's decided to go with that rather than pick one of Milner, Jones or drop Keita back in. You know, things might have been different for Fabinho, Thiago, but I'm going to throw another name out here as well, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who, yeah, in hindsight, I'm looking at that match thinking if we could have just had Chamberlain, and that sounds absolutely berserk when one of the people we could have had is Thiago Alcantara, but there is a thing in my mind going, when I was watching the game and then thinking about it last night and looking back on aspects of it this morning, I'm just a bit like, we've forgotten Chamberlain. We've sort of just, it's like we don't even talk about him now as an injury, if you know what I mean. And I'm left with that one just thinking it could have been so much different if the Liverpool manager had just maybe had at least two of those available, and then he might have had Jota or Chamberlain as his move on 60, however excited we all were to see Shaqiri ready himself.
Yeah. Was Minamino on the bench even?
No.
No, you see, that's mad. But anyway, that's another conversation. We quietly have more injuries than City at the moment, although, you know, they've Guardiola's been quick to reference that they've been decimated at times, and I think they've had one or two games where they've had a few out. But we don't have Van Dijk and Fabinho, who definitely start that football match. Mm-hmm. And then his next two, as you said, a fully fit Chamberlain, a fully fit Keita, both not fully available. The formation was a very strange one in a way. The Jota, the commentators kept moving from calling it a 4-2-4 to a 4-4-2. There was elements of 4-3-3 in there quietly to me, if you watched it carefully. Jota was very much, I think, a lot of the time playing as a wide-ish number eight. He wasn't touchline hugging, and Salah and Firmino weren't central strikers. Salah was still nominally wider right than Firmino was. So it was, I could sort of see what Klopp was thinking. What did surprise me is, with the high octane nature of our approach, we absolutely threw everything at them, is that there wasn't a plan. I know if you'd had five subs, you go, let's put three on 55 and have another second wind. There didn't seem a proper second wind plan to me there. That surprised me.
From either side as well, that's fair, isn't it?
No, but they weren't the ones running themselves into the dirt in the first 25 minutes. It was us who needed a second wind plan. Did we use all three subs in the end? No, I mean, that's...
Why do you think he doesn't?
I don't know.
Well, the other only uses one.
I think the reason he doesn't is because he thinks, and this is the thing all managers fall for, 4-4 might be the wrong expression, but go with, is they get, and when a game is absolutely that tight, as it can feel, you're somewhere between sort of putting half superstitious faith in the equilibrium, and you go, anything could tilt this terribly wrong. They fear it going wrong more than they fear it going right, more than they anticipate it going right.
Why do you think Guardiola only makes one as well? Do you think it's the same thing?
Yeah, I do. I really, really do.
He gets Foden ready. Foden's got his kit on and all that. And
that's a good point, actually, yeah.
He must think, you know what, if I put Foden on and open up too much and we lose this, I've lost it for us.
I think there's always a thing with managers, isn't there, where it's like, them lads are doing what I want them to do.
Yeah.
And they might not be doing it very well, and they might be knackered, but they're doing the things that I want them to do, and then this guy might come on and do something completely different.
I think there's something else, which is the almost what they didn't want was there suddenly to be one player with a load of energy.
Well, this is the Craig Johnston, Bell Paisley theory.
So all of a sudden you throw someone on and they're charging around like no one's business, and they're leaving gaps, or not everyone can go at that pace. And I do wonder if there is an element of that they're just like, it's in a sense, you know, if you look at Liverpool's bench, if Naby Keita is, you know, in fact, I won't even use Keita, I'll use Curtis Jones. You know, has Curtis Jones got 15 in him? Well, he must have a good 15 in him. But is the idea, well, if I do this right now, it just sort of shatters everything, not least because Curtis is going to be demanding it, doing all sorts, and actually we're all right here. And I think it's a really interesting, but because it isn't just one, these are the two best coaches on the planet, and not to say they get everything right every single time they make a sub or don't make a sub, but I think it's really interesting. They both come out after the match, and I want to talk about it at the end, talking about exhaustion and footballers, talking about rotation, talking about I wish we had five subs, and yet between them they've got six, so they only use three. And I think it's really interesting.
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah, I hadn't quite thought about it that way. That is absolutely nuts. They're sitting there whinging about it. I also think, and I'm going to say this, I've had a few spats on Twitter with people about it, the Trent Alexander injury is a classic player being overplayed injury. You don't need to be a top physio to do that. And in fact, Klopp Blaine literally was pointing out that it was a cause they're so tired injury when he was remonstrating, you know, relating to with Guardiola at the end. Klopp acknowledges that's an injury caused by fatigue. Well, why the fuck did Brett, I hate to criticise our manager, the greatest manager in our history, arguably, we're saying at the moment, but why the fuck was Nico Williams not given, or even Milner, given a game at right back at any stage during the last few weeks? You can't.
Why do you think?
I just don't. Because managers, again, because they're human and they have two narratives in their head at once, the same sort of thinking that makes him know that they're dying on their feet, but also doesn't want to make any changes in a game. Because the next game, he goes, Atalanta, we're still not right after the win against West Ham. I was anticipating five or six changes for Atalanta. He makes, what, two? So he goes full tilt there, and he's rewarded
But don't you think part of the reason why is, one, he doesn't necessarily fancy Milner or Phillips at Williams at right back. Two, he's playing a second-choice centre-half in every single match on that side as well, sure. So he doesn't want to do that. So it's not going to affect everywhere. It's in part that he doesn't fancy it. Like, I think if he fancied Milner or Williams at the moment, doesn't. He'd have thrown one with them in possibly, but it sort of tells us that maybe he doesn't. But also number two is that it tells us surely that what you don't want to do is, certainly if Gomez has gone to the other side, if you're playing Nat Phillips, if you're playing Reece Williams, the one thing you don't want to do is put a massive target on that side of the pitch and go ahead, lads, absolutely smash us down here.
Of course, and that is the logic along those lines. But at the same time, you can't then act surprised, and you may lament the fact.
He's not acting surprised, he's lamenting.
Yeah. I suppose that's the case. I don't know. It just feels the manager... Well, manager, look, this is the job the manager has to do. You have to also live in the... As you said, you have to live in the moment, and you have to live longer term. There has been, at times, there are contradictions all over the place. At times there's been... not excessive caution, but real caution, like not bringing Naby Keita in too quickly, not bringing Thiago in too quickly. And Klopp's been very vocal about this. There's one thing players being fit, he said. Matip's another example. There's one thing them being fit, there's another having them ready to play. And he's been very, very strong on this one. So, but yeah, look, we are where we are to a degree, but I don't think as a manager you can complain about the injury because... For the reasons you cited, yes, as a target, yes, as a vulnerability, but you're saying, so I'm deciding rather than have the vulnerability, I'm playing the player into injury. That's what I'm going with, kind of, or near as damn it.
Tough though, isn't it? Because you can't rotate them all, and there's games to win, and he's the one who gets injured. So we're like, well, he should have rotated him.
I know, but it's hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah, but it could have just as easily have been, you know, one of the other players. It could have been Salah. It could have been Robertson. You know, all these guys have sort of played a lot, and I think. You know, he's got games to win, and there's pressures on, and you know, and things like that. And so I think it's tricky. And it is funny the way that now club managers are just all telling international managers what they can and can't do. Like, you need to rest this fella, like they haven't just had him for 6 weeks. Yeah. It sort of makes me laugh. And I know they pay the wages, and we're generally on the club manager's side, but I do find it quite funny.
Yeah, it is.
That's a rest. Look after him.
That is a mad hypocrisy. Yeah, I've literally run this fucker into the ground. What are you thinking at now? You play him now. You've got it. It is insane, isn't it?
A player who we haven't seen, Mike, who just gets dropped back in, and you just said it before very quickly about him. It's a quietly excellent performance from Joel Matip, in the same way that it's a quietly excellent performance in the Merseyside derby, in the same way that, you know, he was quietly excellent repeatedly in the 18-19 season. Liverpool obviously need him to recover from game to game, because ultimately if Liverpool can get Matip on the pitch on a pretty regular basis, then, you know, between Fabinho, Matip and Gomez, they can pick two excellent centre-halves from three every single game.
Yeah, I remember when Van Dijk's injury first happened, I remember saying, if you could guarantee me Gomez and Matip and Fabinho in 70-80% of our big games, in quotation marks, between now and January, before you can maybe go and bolster, then you'd be absolutely happy with it. And the way it's turned out, you know, we're fine. Phillips has come in and man of the match against West Ham. You know, Williams, brilliant against Atalanta, good against Midtjyllands when he comes on. But Matip is a person who's played in this team at its absolute best, and has sort of gone under the radar, weirdly, because, you know, he looks ungainly, you know, and he can be... You know, he's made a couple of mistakes now and again, but, you know, what's point to a defender in the way a lad doesn't?
Yeah.
You know, Joe Gomez is 23. He's probably the best centre-half at his age group. Still makes defensive mistakes now and again. I think the West Ham one, his header sort of falls to Fornals, and people are going, oh, he should be doing better. And maybe he could, but he's on the way down when he heads it. And then, you know, it's just one of them things. It happens to centre-halves, it happens to defenders, because, you know, if it didn't happen, no one would score goals. So, you know, Matip, as much as I think I rate him, I think it's mainly one a week. I think he was fit enough for Tuesday in Atalanta, but he thought, you know what, I'm all right with Reece here. I'm all right with Reece and Gomez, and I'll save Joel till Sunday. He'll have had a full week's training under his belt. Did he start training the week before last?
Yeah, I think he's been pretty... I think the question with him, Mike, could well be not what he does during the matches. That might not have been the question for 10 days. It's what, as you say, is it if it is just one a week, it's how he recovers. It's what happens post-match is what I think. And I think Liverpool will actually now, really ironically, be keeping a very close eye on him now to see, well, all right, this is almost like it's a good experiment, this, because we haven't got a game. So what happens with him next?
Sort of like, and I mean, not as bad, because I know Ledley King was terrible. Like really, really bad knee injuries and stuff, but you know, He's got that thing where he's now, oh, we just manage him through. And, you know, we've seen it in the past, as I said, with Eddie King, who got managed through. And maybe it's a case where Matip doesn't train, say, the five days.
Company.
Maybe he has an extra day off, mate. Maybe it's this schedule as well. I know he's not really being massively involved in it. I know you want to go on to it later, but, you know, there's going to be lots of soft tissues this season. You know, muscles and muscle injuries and stuff. We've, you know, literally seen it, as Rob said before. Klopp was pointing out that Arnold is basically just fatigue. So you've got to manage that fatigue with every player in the squad. And you know, bodies aren't the same. Everyone's different. So you might need managing through it a bit differently. And now it's absolutely like obvious to everyone. Liverpool, you know, the staff at Liverpool will be like, right, well, Joel's done. City there. He's not going up. He's not going on internationals. He's got 2 weeks off. He's definitely in Leicester, isn't he, Sean?
The thing about Matip is he's retired from international duty. Yeah. John, at a very, very young age, just almost like he just can't be bothered with it. Cameroon, he's had a look and thought, I'll be a club player, I'll stay here. But what that now means is, for instance, he can be in today, he can be in tomorrow, he can be in on Wednesday. And I don't think that's necessarily that much of a coincidence from a Liverpool point of view. I think they will be absolutely monitoring everything that happens next with him after that game, not least because he was excellent.
Well, Klopp says that before the game, doesn't he? In his press conference on Friday, you know, he's talking about Matip and says, you know, he's trained 7, 8, 9 days, and then he's got 14 days after. So they made a point of saying that, as in, you know, we feel like we can go on him because he sort of has that gap and we can ask him to sort of go into it. And it's interesting that they do have to be that careful with his body. And I think he's pretty much the only one they do talk about it in that way, yeah. Really. You know, there's no one else who I can think of at Liverpool who's very open around, look, he struggles 2 a week. And so, but we are going to have to wrap him in cotton wool a little bit, because I'm with Mike. If you can get him out once a week between now and the end of January, and Joe Gomez is available more often than not, and you can get a bit from the other lads, I think we're fine. Do you know what I mean? We're not amazing, but I think we're fine, because you see his level and you see how well he does. I thought he was great, both in terms of, you know, what he was winning in the air, but also on the deck as well. Some really good one-on-one defending. He looked calm. I thought, considering, you know, him and Gomez haven't played together, I thought their understanding of each other was pretty good. The fullbacks were helping them out a little bit more, I thought, as well, but that's sort of no bad thing. And I think they look like, you know, a decent little partnership to me. And so if they can get them to go, and that's where the benefit of being in a such strong position, the Champions League group is as well, sorry to jump ahead a little bit, is that you can just sort of leave them for them now.
Yeah.
And see, oh, can he get bit off for being, you know, Reece Williams is never conceding a goal for Liverpool, so that's a bonus. and so, you know, you can just say to him, you'll do a league games till the end of January, and then we'll see where we're at.
No, sorry, miles away.
It's all right. You enjoyed Joel Matip?
I did enjoy Joel Matip. I was just thinking that 2 week international break might serve as a sort of supplementary pre-season for him as well. This is, you know, the timing is perfect. I think, you know, if you think about, you know, my very mildly critical of, let's say, Klopp and his team over the management of Trent Alexander-Arnold, using huge amount of hindsightism, but I think I think with Matip, you could say it's almost textbook. They've timed the run perfectly. They got him back for the biggest game. He did a job in the biggest game. We got a result, and now I think that needs to be said and said again. A point at Man City is a hell of a result. We got that done, and we've seen him through to an international break where he gets to have this kind of supplementary pre-season. Hopefully, touch wood, we've got him for another massive game of Leicester next week. And, you know, and as John's just said, the Champions League games, they don't have quite the same riding on them at the moment, because we've put those 9 points on the board. So all's well that's ending well at the moment.
I want to talk about the superstars in the attack before we discuss Firmino, Rob. I think both Salah and Mane are, to me, they've been interesting in big games recently, where they are, you know, the focus is, it's less of a front three, whoever plays. It's more get them on the ball. Mm. Let's get them involved. And I think that this is a slight sort of evolution of this side that maybe has gone a tiny little bit unnoticed. Is that part of, I think, the reason why, for instance, we say Firmino's been struggling a little bit. I think almost part of the reason why Firmino has been struggling a little bit is that he's becoming less integral to what we do.
Yeah.
Because the other two, in all phases of play and everything that they do, are just becoming more important. They are almost the dominant force now on this team.
Yes, they are. I think there are times in games where I think they're having to make their own chances a bit too much. I mean, they are the sort of players who want to take responsibility. But I feel at times they've got the ball and it's like, it's not like I just pop it off and move, or yeah. Too often they're having to, especially with Salah, you think it's not a matter of people go, Salah's been greedy, he's looking to get shots away. No, there's maybe just not enough around him going on.
He puts
on.
Trent in just before half time as an example. Trent makes the overloads and run on the right, Salah makes the ball perfectly, and Trent's got a chance.
Yeah, so I feel, say with Salah at times, he's playmaker and finisher, and that's true of Mane as well a lot of the time. I think they will relish having I'd love to see a fully fit Thiago get a proper run working with those two. I think we've had glimpses of how they in particular will benefit from it. I think they benefited hugely from Diogo Jota's performance and position in the middle of the week. And I think it's a shame we didn't get to see that reprised quite because of the way we set up. We blunted Jota, quite frankly. Maybe for the greater good, but we did blunt Jota. And Bobby's just not Bobby at the moment. I do think it's time not to give him a sustained period out of the team, but just to at least let him and Jota share that position. I'm not a fan of the 4-2-3-1s. I'm going to go on the record of saying I like the 4-3-3s, and I'd rather play the informed three of the four at any given moment.
So you would, right now, you just want to sort of see him say, well, we just go back to 4-3-3, broadly speaking, stick with that, apart from maybe the odd game here and there, a European game to, for instance, get Shaqiri some time on the pitch or something like that. But you would rather he just sticks 4-3-3.
Yeah, I think so. I think the best of Liverpool we've seen this season was against Arsenal and Chelsea, wasn't it, really? And Atalanta, and those were both 4-3-3s. Albeit there's an attacking, one of the number eights, there's Curtis in one game or Keita in the others, who've got quite a license to join up, but I prefer that rather than the sort of the gay abandoned 4-4-4-2-4s effectively.
This throws back a little bit. I'll go John first, then Mike. Actually, on this, to my sort of Oxlade-Chamberlain point. One of the things I remember from the Arsenal and Chelsea game was, for instance, we were always saying after the fact, it's interesting how much Wijnaldum was the late runner. Wijnaldum was joining, and I'll say it, and it's a really weird thing to say given the fact that he hasn't kicked a ball for us all season, and even last season he was quite inconsistent. I am sort of looking back now on this run of games. You know, we're almost perfect at 7 games, John. We win 5, we draw the other 2. And I am left sort of thinking, it is a shame there wasn't one more midfielder. Yes, you can say Thiago, but I do wonder if things are different if Chamberlain or even Keita could have been around.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because you focus on the front four and you say, oh, he's made that decision because he wants to get Jota in, but I don't believe that he goes that formation if he's got another midfielder who he's got a lot of faith in to play in this sort of game. I think with Curtis, he just decides maybe it's a bit too soon. You know, we know he can knock off on occasion. That's just experience. I'm not saying that, you know, that's a slight on him in particular.
No, he's very young.
Yeah, it's just the kind of, you know, where, you know, he's been used to sort of playing under 23 footballs and bullying teams. And you know, if someone runs off the back of you, then it's sort of not the end of the world. But obviously at this level, when it's Kev De Bruyne, you will get punished. And so that's what we've seen. And so the Milner one's interesting, but maybe he thinks with the tempo that he wants to start at and the pace he wants to go, it's not great for him. I know he likes to finish with Milner on the pitch, and he did that. I think Keita, I don't think any of us really trust, to be honest with you. And so... I think, you know, if he did have one more, and he does, he really likes Chamberlain, you know, where he's been fit and when he's been there, he's played, and he's played well against City as well, scored some really nice goals against City, you remembered, and we had a little Zoom call with a few subscribers, sorry, on Friday night, didn't we, and we were all watching all Klopp's goals against, well, not Klopp's, all the goals under Klopp against City, and
you know, I mean, Klopp's goals to game ratio in these matches, Rob and John, is awful. It's awful.
Yeah, but Chamberlain's
something else. Rob will be on his back about.
But Chamberlain's is good, and so you can see that. And I'm with Rob. I think in terms of 4-3-3, we've just looked a bit more fluid, a bit more like a team, really. And I think, you know, your point about the individualness of some of our forwards, I think that comes more to the fore when we do change the formation, really. And so you see Mane just get the ball and think, oh, I'll just sort of try and make something happen, or Salah sort of the same, really, rather than relying on, well, I know this guy's going to be here, or I know if I drag a man over here, this guy will go there. There seems to be sort of less of that when we play these different formations, and that's frustrating because we do lose something from our play.
The midfield two who do play this one, Mike, they have so much work to do, Henderson and Wijnaldum. It's astonishing, really. I mean, Henderson is still sprinting around the pitch with about 5 to go, making him practically unique amongst Liverpool's players at that stage. But Henderson and Wijnaldum are just left with an enormous burden in this match.
It feels... look, our midfielders are all great. Fabinho, great. Thiago, great. You know, Curtis Jones will be great. But I feel as if them two are the only two that can do that two and a 4-2-4 sort of thing.
I know certainly in a game of that magnitude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Fabinho couldn't. I'm not saying Thiago couldn't, because he literally played in a 4-2-3-1 at Bayern. But not where it was like just empty 4v4, basically. I mean, them two, for me, you know, Henderson's always had his critics for whatever reason. You know, maybe his face just doesn't fit for some people, but he's, you know, absolutely fantastic. And he's only getting better. You know, he's 30 now, but he's sort of grown into this role as I am Liverpool captain. You know, some of the passes he was playing yesterday are ridiculous. Like, lovely footballer now. Always has been, just doesn't really get it from most of the media and some of our fans, weirdly. And Wijnaldum as well. He's one of them players who you sort of, if you're not watching, you don't really appreciate. And I thought, to be fair, I know we're not talking about him at the minute, but Firmino yesterday was blocking a lot of passing lanes off in the middle of the pitch while we were on top. And he's not just a spare part that we're carrying when we're playing with 10. You know, he's sometimes his touch was letting him down, but he was doing things. So that Wijnaldum was doing a lot of things there yesterday. And I've seen a lot of people sort of saying, oh, Wijnaldum sort of went missing there. And I was like, well,
no.
Not what are you watching sort of thing? You know, just because he's not like getting it and doing a bloody Cruyff turn and lashing someone in with a through ball every like 10 minutes or so. You know, he's grafting away. He's still trying to make them runs. Like I said before, he had a go at Robinson. Just put me in. And he didn't. Them two, for me, are the only two I'd be playing in that system. I think there's a consensus, though, and I think Klopp would even agree if he was in the room on the quiet, like, not to the whole world, but he would have definitely played 4-3-3 if there was a midfielder fit who he absolutely put his faith in. Not saying he doesn't put his faith in Jones. I think John's spot on about the age thing. He plays against Atalanta. You know, and that's no small game. That's away.
He's had three starts in these run this run of games.
Yeah, he started three games in that, but I think this one might have. I think you're right. You know, Kevin De Bruyne runs off here. You're sort of like, well, we not take the chance there. It's a bit like Foden, I suppose, for City, where he really wants to put him on, but didn't because he didn't want to make the mistake that cost him the points. I think Jones might have been our third sub had the game been, you know, a bit more energetic. It was weird how the pace of that first half was what we're used to with the City-Liverpool rivalry at the minute. The absolutely 100 mile an hour, both teams, you know, when City get back into it, end-to-end stuff. And, you know, you can't expect that to carry on for 90. It's almost like they've lashed the tribute act out at half-time. So go ahead, have a go, use. You know, we're all set up for this point sort of thing. But I think the midfield thing will continue as long as we've got threadbare stuff. And you know, you can sort of half do a Shaqiri in there instead of maybe Jota or Firmino and say, well, he can be a 10 but also an 8. And I know Rob was saying before about Jota not really being out wide, but I think he's right as well in saying that we blunted him because he's out on that right and he's not really. I know he scored the goal against West Ham, didn't he, from that position basically. But I just think, like, after that week, the goals against Atalanta was just natural finisher for me. The one where he thinks to keep it, the first one is ridiculous, like, and then the second one's even better. I just wanted to see him in the middle. And I know you can't carbon copy performances because, you know, such is life. You people are different. Performances can't be like that all the time. You can't win every game 5-0. But I think for the way it's ended, we can all be saying, oh, it could have done this, should have done this. Maybe we were unlucky at points, but I think we're all taking the points, and hopefully, you know, Thiago and Fabinho back. The 4-2-4 is there if we ever need it, but I don't think he'll willingly go to it just out of the blue.
I think there's, on Wijnaldum, Rob, I think there's something, as Mike's saying there, I'm surprised people were sort of trying to say, if there's a conversation afterwards saying he goes missing a bit. I think actually in a big game, often he ends up being a bit the fella who is blocking the passing lanes, who's making it awkward for the opposition. I thought he was unbelievably involved in the early going, but also right the way through the 90 minutes. Yeah. I think I think it's a reminder that it isn't like he, in inverted commas, because I've said it at times as well, you know, what's Wijnaldum done here for second half? Sometimes he does a very specific job for the team that's difficult to watch, in that a lot of it's the unseen work, so you've got to really keep your eye on it, and if you're not on the ground, that can be difficult. I think he was very prominent within the match.
Yeah, I'd like to see the touches on the ball stats. I bet his were enormously high. I mean, he's far from anonymous. I was watching him very closely. Him and Firmino are the go-to ball when we're coming out straight away. They are the lads who you want to get two touches, get it out your body, lay it off quickly, and we're moving. My only problem with Ronaldo in the first 30 or 40 is in possession. He was a little weaker on a couple of occasions than you're used to him being.
Clever from City, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They really were around him. You know, he's an absolute bull in possession, Wijnaldum. He sticks his arse out. His shoulders are big. He's compact, Wijnaldum. He's not a tall man at all, but he really, you know, but they made it very difficult, and he loses it badly at one stage.
They were targeting him.
Yeah, they're quite right. I think you're right.
Really interesting.
Yeah, because he's our out ball. Yeah. I think, well, you know,
we target the strongest link.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Rob. Wijnaldum just does what the manager says every single time. And maybe he doesn't do it like 100%, but he I remember him scoring a goal against City on New Year's Eve a few years ago where he's making that late run. And he's probably being told by the manager, you're the one that makes the late runs today, so he thinks it's sound. He makes it 4 or 5 times, scores a goal. The Barcelona game comes on, scores 2. He's making the late runs because he's being told to. He's absolutely the man who Klopp will say, I want you to do this, this and this and this. And Klopp knows he will do that.
Plays the third most passes from a Liverpool point of view over the course of the game.
Plays the what, sorry?
Third most passes from a Liverpool point of view over the course of the game in open play.
Not anonymous.
So the two centre-halves and then Wijnaldum's the next.
Yeah,
I think more than Henderson.
So what I think one of the other things, I think what they do is they hit Wijnaldum in possession and they want to stop Henderson getting on the ball. Mm. And I think it's really interesting because most sides would do that the other way around.
Mm.
And they choose to do it that way. And we talk a lot, like for instance, there's always a lot of Henderson, De Bruyne stuff. And I think what I think is really interesting is I actually think City are trying to stop Henderson from getting on the ball in massive parts, and De Bruyne is actually doing part of that job. They don't want Henderson moving us 40 yards. Instead, what they do is they say, Wijnaldum won't do that, he'll try and carry it, so you smother him and you stop Henderson from getting on it so Liverpool can't go fast. And in hindsight, it's the sort of thing you're like, yeah, that's pretty clever. Most sides can't do that. Manchester City are really good, John. And again, that's something to take away from the game. Manchester City are really good and they work the game out as it wears on. Credit to the players, credit to the manager.
Yeah, the smart footballers are, and there's only so often they have to do sorts of stuff like this, and so you don't see huge amounts.
I wonder if they enjoy it almost, you know what I mean? Because I thought it was really interesting that the two sets of players were coming off.
Yeah,
they all had a lovely chat with one another, yeah. And I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah, I think they probably do enjoy it. You know, you see sort of a bad tackle in these games, do you? You know, throwing one in, you know, like the Merseyside derbies or whatever, they're full of them, aren't they? But you know, even the Liverpool Man United games, it's very rare. You know, there's been a couple of sort of sendings off, but it's usually sort of a mad thing, like the Mane one, where it's just a freak accident, really, isn't it? You understand why he sends him because the injury is bad, but you know, it's not a malicious thing. I don't think anyone believes, and so you know, I think there is a healthy respect there for each other. I think there's a, you know, the managers enjoy, you know, seeing what the other one's going to do, working out ways to sort of better it, and you've got to say that the City did, you know, have that period in the first half, you know, when they sort of get the equaliser, and then after that, when you know, when they are on top, but then if they, madly, Liverpool are great as soon as they miss that penalty, aren't they? It's like a sort of go, oh, sound brilliant, you know, we got away with one there, let's finish this half, and we went from sort of hanging on at the first half to sort of not wanting the whistle to go because we were looking so dangerous. And I think, you know, as I say, there's natural to and fro in these games. There's really good footballers doing interesting things, you know, working so hard as well, you know, in terms of, you know, City, you know, in terms of, you know, as we've said, it's different style for them. You know, they're used to seeing a lot more of the ball than maybe they would do against a team like Liverpool, but they're showing different, you know, sides to the game, really. And I just think you've got to take a point. They took a point. Everyone sort of took a point on about 70, I think, really. And we move on, and we move on in a really good position in the league.
Yeah, it was just worth, I've got to say this because we've talked about it in recent weeks, some of the VAR chat about the penalty decisions, the one that's given for City and the one that's not given for us when Rodri handles. I've watched them back, and Gomez said, you know, it's a bit of a problem, VAR, watching this in slow motion rather than real time. If you watch it again in real time and take your I don't want this to be, you know, to happen thing, it's a penalty that I think certainly within the realms of the modern rules.
Yeah.
His body shape, he goes side on so that his body can be as wide enough so they can get a block. Of course he's a bit unlucky, there's no doubt about it. It's far from blatant, but we can't be overly disappointed apart from the fact there's a little out of context with how the game's moving at the time. And I think the Rodri one, it is close enough to his body that you can't say the silhouette's out there. So I just
it's not just the rules and arse though, because he's pulling his hand away and it's his running motion, isn't it? And pulled his hand away and he's like too late and pulling his hand away. It's not his fault. It's like the Vardy.
Fault, but there is a sense. I don't know. I watched it again. Let's put it this way. I'm not beside myself with the injustice of some of them that
because
I've seen.
Because De Bruyne missed it.
No, not because of that. Not because of that.
I think you're expecting that to get given, aren't you?
When I saw it and watched it again, I didn't at the moment it happens, you sort of, I suppose, whether it's hope or expectation. When I saw it again this morning, rewatching the game, I went, oh, shit, yeah, that's a pen. I thought that's a pen. I'm happy, I suppose, I mean, just to divert onto the rule. I've said before, I'd be happy with the handball rule if there was just no subjectivity at all, that it touches your hand, it's a fucking penalty. it's the mild... What slightly worries me is there is a cigarette paper between giving the one on Gomez and not giving the one on Rodri. I think the ref and the VAR on balance, I think they probably just about got it right. We can't scream at either decision, but it's very fucking close. And you know, I don't know.
But it's the silhouette thing, isn't it? Because I yeah. I know the ball's going to hit my arm, but no, it's not out the silhouette, so I'm not moving my arm because he won't give it.
Yeah.
Those sort of things. So you can start to be cute about it.
I know, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's not black. It's not black and white still.
Last thing. Firmino is first sub. There's no third sub. We don't get to see what the next sort of tactical move is, because I think, as I said before, both managers at that point are, we talked about a little what we have, we hold. But Firmino is first sub for Shaqiri. I don't think it necessarily changes things, particularly from a Liverpool point of view. And I do wonder if the manager had this time over, if he might do something a little bit different, Rob. But with Firmino, you felt like he just couldn't entirely get himself in. Is that the mic thing, that he's doing a lot of work, a lot of the unseen stuff, he's doing a lot of blocking things off? For me, I think that could be the case first half an hour. I think there's a lot of Rodri with the ball at the start of the second half. And I do wonder if the manager's a bit like, you need to be closer to him there.
Yeah, it's a sub. I mean, I was sort of calling for Firmino to be the first sub, but I wanted a midfield player on to just take us back to a 4-3-3 and give us a more compact base to win the game from, or to at least preserve the point from. Very, very surprised to see Shaqiri come in there. And, you know, I'm not sure that's maybe the biggest conversation is his rehabilitation, that he was our first sub in the biggest game, the hardest game of the season. That is a bit mad. I think that's a big takeaway from that. The fact that he goes with, also, you bring on Shaqiri, he isn't a pressing monster, to quote Pep Linders on Jota. So it's an incredibly positive substitution, in the sense that that's a substitution where you just say, I want your guile to go and win us the game. I want you to do something special, really. I think, so you can say, yes, Firmino was running out of legs, understandably so maybe, but you don't put a lad who's not famed for his legs on. In fact, he's got legs who are made of fucking plasticine or whatever his biochemistry is. But it's a very bold substitution on a day, really, of a manager who just, our manager, is just making bold decision after bold decision. And it's almost, it reminded me of something I was reading, an Athletic piece about Klopp at the weekend, which was very, very good. And one of the things various people said, one of the things Jürgen says in the thing, it's not actually about getting the right tactics sometimes, it's about everyone buying into them. And I think you can add on top of them, also sometimes it's about absolutely bamboozling and baffling your opponent. The way Klopp starts that match baffles Guardiola and his entire team. And the Jürgen Shaqiri substitution surely would have done something of the same, not on quite the same degree. Catching people out is very big for Jürgen.
I think just on it, John, on the Shaqiri move, the way in which he does it, I do wonder if there's a little element of he almost wants as it's almost an attacking sub that becomes sort of defensive. In that what has to happen there is Sterling, Gundogan and Cancelo have all got to... They've got to worry about Shaqiri a little bit at that point. Like, he goes over and he does play pretty right mid-ish. And I do wonder if an element of that is, we'll just give these something else to think about here for 5 or 10.
Yeah, he's playing so well, though. You know, he's as well. It's a case of...
Shaqiri.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've got to assess the impact he's made in the last couple of games and say, well... Not just that he deserves it, but, you know, if someone is going to make something happen in a game, then maybe it is him. And the game had got a little bit, not flat by then, but, you know, people were starting sort of to tire. And you know, it was a game where you felt like it was either going to be a mistake or a bit of magic that had won it. You win it, you know, like when we go to Chelsea and Sturridge gets that amazing goal out of nowhere, and you felt like that something like that might happen for Liverpool, and Shaqiri's got that in him. He's capable, obviously backs himself, he believes in his talents, and why not? And I think he just looks at him and thinks, if this you know, I think if it was going better, you know, he might have gone for sort of, you know, a different guy, but he's looking out there, you know, you could have, he takes for me, you know, you could have done two or three others, I think, because of the tiredness and because the, you know, the, as I say, the energy levels kind of weren't quite there, you know, it was the end of this tough run. And I think he just thinks of, and go back to what you were saying before, Neil, about would you, if do you want, really want to throw a sort of a live wire on who's not going to be on the same level as him. Shaq's not going to sort of bolt around everywhere, but what he can do is spread a beautiful pass out of nowhere or just, you know, hit one set piece 25 yards, boom, in the back of the net. So I think he just backed the lad to make something happen. And obviously it means a bit of a jig for the other guys as well, so you can maybe get some of the others into more attacking positions and things like that as well. But I think he just looked at what Shaqiri's done last couple of games with his assists and with his play and just thought, you know, this guy will pop up, it might pop up in the 85th minute with something brilliant. He didn't, which was a shame.
It was a shame. Mike, then, to talk about what both managers go out of the way to talk about after the match, what Solskjaer talks about before the game, after his match on Saturday morning. It seems like Steve Bruce mentioned it in a press conference. I noticed Callum Wilson went off with a hamstring as well. You said before about the number of soft tissue injuries. These footballers, it is remarkably intense. It's obviously more intense for the lads who are playing regular European football at the moment. But it is going to be a season that is marked by injuries first and foremost.
Yeah, and going into this international break now, the teams that haven't had teams playing twice a week because the European things, they're going to have lads who have played, is it three games?
Some countries play three games.
So they're going to be going, well, hang on a minute, like, he's knackered, so I can't play him on the Saturday first back. And it's going to get to a point this season, by the way, where everyone's doing two a week.
Yeah.
December looks busy, you know, as it always is, but it's this weird season now where it's just like we always wanted it. Didn't we ever imagine someone saying to you 2 years ago, tell you what, footy every 3 days, 4 days? You'd be like, yeah, like, how good's that sound? But then the reality of it is people just get injured, you know, like it's especially playing at this level where it's so intense at the very, very top level.
I couldn't believe there was a game on a Friday night at 6 this week. I know, honestly, yeah. I was like, no, it's not started. I honestly couldn't believe
where's
it.
Where's that come from? Like, it's because it's the international weekend, isn't it?
I don't know what it was, but I couldn't believe it.
Even the 12 o'clock Sunday, you're like, all right, we've played a couple now and again. I remember beating City once, actually, after we got knocked out by Besiktas in the Europa League a few years ago. That was 12 o'clock Sunday, and it's like, mad dish, you know, having a bevy at like 10:30 in the morning. What's going on here? But
God bless Wetherspoons. Yeah. Nowhere else open.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a big, big wake up call for a lot of managers down the league. And I don't know what it is about. You can definitely tell the people who definitely voted to keep the five. By the way, we did, City did, United did. I think Bruce will have done
it was Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, and then Brighton are the seven who voted to keep the five subs, yeah. And the other 13 voted against them.
That's against them, innit? As much as they say, oh well, look at the bigger squads, this, that and the other, you know, Burnley twice a week with say 15 players, good luck with when you've got six.
But I wonder whether is there a breakdown between the managers, because it's not Sean Dyche going to the Premier League meetings. I'd be a laugh if it was.
it's the club executives.
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder whether we all say, the managers don't want this, but you know, more and more are coming out that seemingly that they do, and I wonder whether there's just, you know, is there enough people like Jurgen Klopp and other football clubs who've got that sway, who've got that level of sway. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if for some of those clubs they're not even asking the managers, what do you think on this? They're just going, oh no, that's an unfair advantage.
I think
it's tougher for the smaller sides to not be too patronising away for it. Because you see what happened to West Ham when they lose Mikel Antonio. And that's had a bigger impact on West Ham. I know they won at the weekend, but they got away with one. You see what that has a bigger impact than us losing Virgil. You know, everyone said, oh, Virgil, blah, blah, blah. We won every game more or less since. Do you know what I mean? Like, we were on one beaten since. I think the bigger clubs, you know, did you have to play more? But they can cope more with the injuries. And so I think it's a bit of a myth that, it's another thing that helps the big teams. Because, and I think if the lesser clubs think that, or the managers of them think that, I think they'll change their mind pretty soon when suddenly they're like, oh, we've only really got three top players and everyone else is making up the numbers a little bit and two of them are out. Fucking hell.
I also wonder, and I don't know, I mean, it's difficult to empirically measure this, whether if you're lower down the league, there's less of a gap between your best player and your 16th best player, between your third best player and your 18th best player. Whereas, however good you are, we don't have the gap between Virgil van Dijk and our next one's huge. The gap between our front three and those below, apart from Rucker, notwithstanding Jota's coming through, I think that gap's bigger because the very elite don't accept being squad players. Whereas if I'm a squad player at Burnley, I know I'm really not far away from being a fixture at Burnley, quite possibly. There's always a spot in the squad. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not sure it couldn't benefit the smaller clubs in a certain sense.
Possibly, but they have chosen to go against it, Rob. And one of the things you see is someone who's advocated flog the footballers to near death, that is your stated position in the past in this discussion.
It is.
That the last 20 of that match, Liverpool versus Manchester City, they're out on their feet. And I think there's something else that's missed here. It's not just the number of games. It's that no one's had a proper pre-season. The break between the end of last season and the start of this one is shorter than it's ever been. And I think, in general, football supporters are going to be watching poorer footballers, both in terms of their execution of the game, but also literally who's fit. Well, John makes the excellent example of Mikel Antonio. Newcastle have now lost Callum Wilson. You know, we're talking here about the two best number nines for each of those teams. So you are now watching poorer footballers. I'm not saying that five subs wasn't necessarily stop that from being the case, but I do think the idea of how are we looking after the assets, how are we looking after the people we love to see, is something that should be on the lips of the people who run football clubs. And it seems to me as though it hasn't been.
Yes. Okay, let me just first put the counters against that, because I'm 70-30 in the view with the camp, with the managers and with the view you've just stated. They do get 3.5 months off, which is unprecedented. For the likes of Mo Salah, who play African nations, summer tournaments or whatever, and the likes of Klopp, you go back a year, would have gone, I've got boys who haven't had more than 2 weeks off in 3 years. Mm. Well, they had 3.5 months off, right? I just wonder if the calibration of their year has been slightly thrown askew. If I'm looking to something in the football calendar for humane reasons, I'm looking at the international breaks. I mean, last year we were complaining about two games a week from... Really, I don't really see that. From start of season to January 1st, are we playing more games than we did last season? Because I certainly remember us playing two games. Once we passed that initial phase of the season, that first five or six weeks.
One of the things you've lost is you've lost the idea of the EFL Cup game that comes halfway through the gap between September and October and October and November.
Sure.
That's gone. So that idea of everyone gets that week off to an extent is completely gone.
Yeah.
Although Liverpool did weaken for Michelin. And then I think that in December it is as relentless as ever. The one thing I point out to you, Rob, genuinely, remember the game 2019, Liverpool versus City?
Jesus, remind me.
The 2-1? That comes at the end of a congested Christmas period.
Yeah,
the end of all sorts of stuff. That day combined, Liverpool and City put in 524 pressures, according to StatsBomb, between the two of them over the course of the game.
So
524. Yeah. Yesterday, the combined was 260.
Wow.
And I think that what you're seeing there is... And that's the end of a Christmas period. It was a massive game, but it's the end of the Christmas period. Mm. They've had 5 days. They played Tuesday since the Champions League game. I think there is something within these footballers where the managers don't feel as though they can have them be anywhere near as intense as they have been in the past. And that felt like an intense game yesterday. So there's the feelings, but then there's the, this is how this stuff's playing out. And I think that you've got... I think there's a couple of things here. One is that also we all want to see an English team do really well in Europe. Next February, next March, next April. We've all got the one we want. Other people have got other ones, but we've got the one we want.
Yeah.
My point is right now, I don't think an English side makes the semis of the Champions League. Because I think it's not, and I think it's in part because the nature of the competition, where you've got six teams going for four Champions League spots, you've got two teams knocking lumps out of each other, probably at the top of the table. I think all of that now, because it doesn't stop now. They come back after this next international break. There isn't another international break till the end of March. And if you just get to the fourth round of the FA Cup, you are playing a game every 3 days, right the way through that period, with the exception of 1 week before Christmas, but then you play three games in Christmas week.
But Jan 3rd to end of Feb, I'm sure if you park the FA Cup, right, or play the kids in the FA Cup, I'm sure it's not that intense.
There's two more league games dropped in because the ones we missed at the start of the season.
Ah, right, there is. Okay, isn't this similar for the Spanish and Italian leagues, though? They've got
the five subs, though.
Oh, they've all got the five subs.
Every other country's got five subs, including Scottish Premier League's done five subs.
Well, it is mad that we think we want to... Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm violently agreeing with you. If we want to compete in Europe, we need a level playing field. It feels like a decision on a par in terms of its short-sightedness with the decision for us to unilaterally change the transfer window. Do you remember when we thought, oh, that'll work for the best, given that nobody else is doing it? It is a bit nuts in that respect.
I think it's interesting that the language around it from managers has changed, and so they used to sort of, you know, almost ask people to feel a bit sorry for the footballers, wasn't it? And it was like, you can't ask these lads to keep doing this, and everyone's like, they're on $100,000 a week, they can play twice and things like that. And, you know, that was the argument, and it never completely sort of washed with me, but that's sort of what would happen. And I think football clubs and managers especially have sort of got onto that and changed the language, and it's become, footy's going to be well worse for yous, you know. This is going to make footy not as good, what you're asking these people to do. That you know, you can't expect us to do all the boss things that you want with this. And I think that's an interesting change, because it's almost appealing to the kind of idea of what are we trying to achieve here? What are we trying to do? You know, is it the idea of, you know, do you want to be, you know, strapped to a chair and force-fed burgers? Or do you want to actually sit down and have a nice meal? And do you know what I mean? And it's like, that's kind of like, you know, what they're almost saying we've ended up at. This, you know, with our greed, with our gluttonous nature as football fans, you know, we've gone for this thing, which is
looking
actually,
at me, aren't you?
I thought you were going to write down force-feeding people burgers. That's a good idea. Yeah, yeah. New restaurant idea.
Concept.
Yeah. New South Liverpool gaff called force-feed. Coming to you soon.
Yeah, so I think it's almost kind of like, you know, they're starting to say, you know, be careful what you wish for. You think you want football all the time, but actually you don't.
Do you think that's why we don't rest against Atlanta? Because Klopp thinks, I get to 12 in the Champions League group and then I've got 2 weeks there where I can just go, I'll give my Kearney a game. If we're through, which we're basically, we're on 9 now, there's no chance we're not through. 10 normally sees you through in a Champions League group. We've got Atalanta at home. Is it after Leeds?
We've got Atalanta at home after Leicester. Then we have Ajax at home the following week, and then we go away to Leeds.
So I think we go full strength against Leicester. I think he doesn't play Matip against Atalanta again because he'll do Williams. I think if we win that, we're on 12. Then you've got Ajax and Midtjylland, and you just go, you know what? I'll have the front three having a week off, because he did against Midtjylland anyway, Anfield, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was Jota, Origi, Shaqiri and Minamino. I think he'll do that.
But not every team's got that luxury. We're talking about the sort of wider kind of, you know, football thing, and it's interesting. All the managers have sort of come out really and supported each other, and I thought
it was noticeable that yesterday both Klopp and Guardiola go out of the way. I think they bring Solskjaer up almost, don't they?
Yeah,
they say, what he said yesterday.
Yeah, and I thought Solskjaer was great, and it does make me laugh. And I said this on Twitter, that the fact that he's basically slaughtering the TV companies, isn't he, and saying like, you can't keep putting games now, and then they go back and they go, oh, what do you think, people who work for BT Sport? I think he's out of order.
The truth is, there is a remedy for managers, but it's how much they gamble. And the Trent thing is another example, as we talked about right at the beginning of the show, is you can just use those squad players, you know. You can just use those. They're the ones going, come on, just fucking use us. But the problem is the likes of Solskjaer and Klopp going, I don't want to rest Marcus Rashford because I want to win.
Yeah.
They go, well, you can't win all the games. You've got to think a different way during this phase.
Okay. Thank you very much. You're not having it. No, I am. I can. There's an argument for it. I just think it's a difficult one to phrase to people who feel Solskjaer a better example than Klopp. I could lose my job in a week and a half.
Yeah.
So I could lose my job in a week and a half, lads. I'd quite like to win.
Keeping them fresh for the next fella.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great news, Poch. thank you very much to Mike Kearney, to Rob Gutman and to John Gibbons. It's been the Anfield Wrap. Sports Social Podcast Network.